Session number 11750, reel 13.
Mr. Lineker, reel 13. We're talking about your time in the Sosnovich E535 coal mine, and I just wanted to pick up on a couple of things you said. On your day off, you said you had to delouse. Lice were becoming a problem here,
yeah.
Were they?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, there was a big problem. There was fleas on the blankets. You got your fleas, you got lice, huge ones and all, eating at you, could feel them, full of blood when you cracked them, all in the seams of your clothes. And the only way you could ship them was, well, you killed them by hand, got as many out by washing, and hang them on the line and your blankets, and that'll bring the fleas out the material of the blanket.
And that you do on your monthly day off?
Yeah.
Did they lead?
You had no time to do them all the time. You could feel them, but you couldn't do nothing about it. And there was the odd bug in the beds.
Did they, they bite you, did they cause any diseases like scabies or anything to start breaking out?
Some went with a scabies to the doctors, I suppose. But the cleanest person in the world can get scabies, as well, you know, can't they? Never affected me that way. The only thing it did to me was bite bloody lumps out of me and fill the cell up with my blood. That's all, and do huge things.
Were you too? You said before when you had them, you couldn't sleep. Would you?
You couldn't. You could sleep because you were that bug and you went to sleep. But as regards, you could feel them. You could feel them walking up your leg and your hand and automatically go down around your neck, under your arms. And you used to go around your privates. They always found a nice cushy spot to bloody go, you see. So until you just drifted off to sleep.
Now, didn't the Germans fix up delousing for you at all?
There was no delousing machines at all there in the working parties. None.
So it was
you had to do it yourself.
Only when you went back to Lansdorf.
It was I never went back to Lansdorf after I left it. It was a ritual that on the day off. They'd all be sat outside their huts, cracking away, between the thumbnails and the blankets on the line.
Now, another thing you said you did, and I'd like to talk about, is the shop, and you got paid a mark a day.
We got a Deutsche Mark a day, which the Deutsche Mark, as I say, was about as good as a bloody Italian lira to us. It was nothing. You could do a fortnight's money for a razor blade, and
so
it was ridiculous. It's a waste of time.
It was the same as the situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You also seem to imply that the mine owners took the profit.
Well, I've always felt, not that I have to worry about it now, but I think that they run the shops purely and simply as I don't know what they get for our Deutsche Mark, how much they get in real money off them, but it was a bit of an enterprise.
The other thing you mentioned is that you'd spend the day letter writing.
Or you could, beside the lousing, you time passed it, you'd drop a line home. Or if the mail came up, you could read them. You know, when you got a letter there, it's not like at home you read it and say, oh, that's nice, I enjoyed that, and throw it in the dustbin. You'd read them again and again and again, as if it was a good book, like you get out the library.
What would she write about to you, or what would your relatives and... Was it just Dorothy?
Dorothy, your usual thing, newlywed, all that cape, and Mrs. May, I wish she was at home, and let's hope it's not long. I saw your mother, and she was all right, and your Kathleen's this, and with no babies then, you see, and nothing. My mother's all right, and usual topics.
What about the rest? Did the rest of the family write to you?
My mother, I think I got one letter off her. I had an aunt and uncle that was brilliant to me. Brilliant. They got in touch with an organisation in Three Bridges, Sussex. And I got, not regular, but quite a number of times, I got 50 tins of Rothmans. Well, as I told you before, I don't smoke all that much, But they was worth money to me. They were money. The bread. I know it's terrible to make a fella smoke his head off and let you have his tin of bully beef, isn't it? But that was how it went.
Did you get any other parcels, besides the Red Cross parcels?
Dorothy sent me 2 blankets and I received 1. That's all.
How were you able to carry on normal life when you were this tired?
Well, it wasn't a normal life, was it? If you think about 12 hours in a day, maybe it's more, that you're grafting and counted and drudgery, and then have to think about maybe having what you could scrape out your parcel if you've any left, and getting your head down, there's not much left, is there? And that's not just a 5-day-a-week job.
It was every day?
Every day, except for 1 day per month.
So Saturday and Sunday were no different?
No. Saturday and Sunday was no different than Monday and Tuesday.
How did it affect your health, that sort of grinding routine, at Sosnovich, not
well,
later?
Well, I started there, you see, with the graft and the ration. And then you started to notice one another that was getting a bit thin.
It was visible.
Yeah.
How were you getting on with your fellow prisoners? I mean, like the Bunny Twins and the rest of them there.
Good friends of those three. In fact, I wrote them just after the war, but I've lost track now. Good friends. But the same thing applied as it did in the other camps. There are days when you got niddly. Because of the conditions you were living under, you're living all males round you. Somebody had a grind, a grievance or something, and they'd had a bloody letter from home. Oh, the Yanks are in England now, and look at this, she's buggered off, and she's had a baby, or she doesn't want to wait for me, and all this stuff going on. Or he wouldn't even tell you, he'd sit there, bloody dejected, mopesing, and all. You were in the same position as him because you're thinking, you've got a wife, and what's happening? You know nothing. Nobody can tell you. And then you start thinking, she's writing me this letter. She's writing me letters like this. It won't be long now. I'm sure it'll be all over and we'll be home, we'll be together. And you start getting bloody thoughts like, this is maybe a load of cobblers, this. She might be having a time of her bloody life. You follow? You start having doubts.
What would you write back to her? Did you try and say any of this?
No, because I'm frightened. If I give her that idea, it'll drive her to it. If that's all he thinks about me.
So what would you write about?
Stuff that would not make her anxious. The least anxious, even if it was lies. Don't worry, I'm all right. I'm not doing too bad. Didn't even know I was in a mine. Got a little job. Made some nice friend. See? All this crap. Kidology. But then you're doubting her stuff. Then is she doubting me? How can he be having a time like this? So you're kidding each other, aren't you? You're living in bloody cuckoo land.
Now, one thing you mentioned was sabotage. Did you try any sabotage at Sosnovich at all?
Not at Sosnovich. All these, you see, we was learners at Sosnovich, Peter. I mean, the first time we'd ever dropped below the bloody floor was at Sosnovich, and we were walking into a no man's land and learning.
So you weren't aware?
We wasn't aware how we could do these things and how we could wheedle out of this bloody lot. But we soon learnt, and it was by the time we got to the other
Now,
pit.
How long were you at E535 Sosnovich?
Where were we up to? November? Up to beginning, I should imagine, up to the beginning of 44.
So you went there in November, late early January, early December, and
about February, a few months.
So just 2 or 3 months at most.
Yeah.
Just one last question. How did you get on with the civilian miners? I forgot that. Sorry, just put that in there.
Well, the civilian miners was Polish. And they wasn't happy about the Germans. But they was treated as if they was bloody, you know, rubbish. They invaded Poland, and so the Poles weren't very happy about them, was it? You got the odd one that we used to call a border rat, who was bred and born in Obersilesia, but who was of German extraction, because there were a lot of Germans in that district, you see. And you would get one that was sympathetic towards the German and was bloody glad that invaded it and all that. But then again, you got the other one that wasn't very happy about them being there. I worked with one where his son was in the German Navy and captured at St. Malo. And they never a nice fellow you could wish to meet with me, because he was a prisoner in the First World War in England.
I mean, they wouldn't give you any food or anything, though, to help?
I got food off this one, Mal Sherrick. It was his birthday, and he brought a cake, and he'd have thought he'd been made out of bloody sawdust. And he brought a little bottle of snaps to celebrate his birthday, and give me a wedge of it and a little drinkies of snaps. Now the Steiger, the overseer, we call him Bulldog, huge fella, bullet-headed bugger.
Would he be German, or was he
German? He was from Saxony.
And what was he like?
Bugger. Used to have a little, the hammer, you know how they carry the hammer with a little hammer head on the end, tapping, you used to tap the wall, you know. Bugger he was.
In what way, though?
Well, the way he treated us was just a load of bloody scum that he could manipulate and do whatever he wanted with. Even like that with the civvies. I'm German. Yes, the attitude was shocking.
Now, you were coming to your end of your time at Sosnovich. How come you were moved? Because you weren't ill?
Nope. Why? I don't know. Was it because I won't know to this day, whether they were slowly finishing with that mine? As I said at the beginning, it should have been condemned well before the war, according to rumour. Well before the war. Now, have they got second thoughts and said, well, we'll phase this out? Could have been. We don't know. All we knew was, pack your bags, you're off.
And what happened?
Well, we was transported then, trucks again. And I never saw Bunny again, and I never saw the Southampton lad again. You never meet these people. You're just separated. You're passing in the night with these buggers. You might make friends, but you can't keep them. And I was taken to a place at Boyton. That's the German name. It doesn't exist now. It's now called Bitom. Bitom. That's the Polish name for it, because it's Polish name. Just outside Katowice.
So not far again. Not too far.
No, not far. A ride.
And what did it have a number, this mine?
E-72.
And what was the setup?
And the bloke that run it was a glorified German sergeant major, who we called John the Bastard. Not John the Baptist, John the Bastard. And he was a bastard. E-72, and the name of the, they call them Grubies, that's a German name for mine. It was Grubie Arbeit, E-72, Hohenzollern, Grubie, that is a German name. more modern pit, huge place, the face of it, the fascia outside, huge, and the camp much the same as at Sosnovitz. Maybe it's bigger. Well, same type of accommodation, same bloody performance counting, same routine with feeding, same routine with getting your lamp and your deep pads, but and it was 1600 metres deep. There was a lot of floors or
levels
a word, yeah. There was a lot of different levels. I happened to be on that one, and I think it was the bottom one. But as you came out of the pit shaft, it was more modernised than the 0535. Well lit, bigger arc. The old electric tram affair to take you to the facings, but as I said, the civilians got on that, and we had to walk, whether it was a quarter of a mile in or three quarters of a mile in or whatever. But then there was different types of facings. You could go into one which was as big as a ballroom. In fact, the props, if you could call them props, was bloody near a tree, the size of them, huge, high. In fact, the shot fire is a civvy that goes up to bore and place the shots and fire. It must have gone up a good two lengths of ladder, the extending ladder to get to the top, so you can imagine the height of it, and the width and the size. And when that were fired, there was some bloody cove come down. You can bet your life it was a shift of more ship moving it, and you wasn't on your own. There was maybe three or four other blokes with you. And that was straightforward shoveling and filling the trucks up with them, which there would be. They'd either be on a sort of, if you can imagine, the big dipper at Blackpool, where it's taken up on these hook affairs to the top, you see, and then they load in and released, and they run down to a bottom to a centralised place, a centralised, what do you call it, collecting, and then taken away in bulk by the electric tram. And many a time we used to fiddle about with them until they all piled up at the bottom.
How would you do that? That was active sabotage, then.
Yeah.
What would you do to a truck?
Well, there would be control with a breakage system, you see, and you could hook it up till it when it set off from the top, it would be kept in check, you see, and it would just go like hell if it kept on the lines. All well and good for the Jerry's if it didn't. Well, it created a delay, let's call it like that, all bits and pieces like that, as regards that one.
Did the Germans realise what you were doing?
Well, they couldn't prove nothing, could they? They couldn't prove nothing. They accepted it as an accident, but I suppose at the back of their minds, it was fishy, wasn't it? And don't forget, the only German down there, or what shall we say, the minimum number of Germans down, was the overseers, because all the others were civilians. They was in charge of you, but they wasn't the big stick men, you know. They was worried about whether you'd do it, because they'd be in bloody lumber with the overseer, you see.
So you work. It was on a
so
large.
So you work. You worked very as reasonably as you could, happily together with the civilians, because he wanted you to be happy down there, for his bloody benefit. In other words, you see. Well, that were one face. Then you'd get, much like you got at E535, the old tunnel, what's six, eight, 9 foot high one, which was roofed by these arc metal arc
pit props.
Well, supports that was. They kept up with the props and that the same. And that was he could bore and place the shots and fire it. All that as needed, he could do it on his feet. And that was truck moving. Now the other one, which I unfortunately was in quite a lot of times, was a meter eye seam. Where you're on your knees, and you could go in for 10, 20, maybe 30 yards inside on your knees, crawling in. And that was a cutting. They had a cutting machine in that. They didn't fire it at all. It was cut, just like slicing cake. The seam was, you see, it just dragged it, sort of stropped it out, like picked it out. It's, in other words, like a bloody mechanical pick. It's good to, it's a mechanical pick, yeah. And beside of it run a conveyor belt. And the civvy worked this cutter, and that would be done on the early shift. That would be prepared by the night shift for the early shift to come to cut the coal away. And it'd go along, I mean, it doesn't go along at 10 mile an hour, it goes along nice and slow, but it's cutting away and filling this conveyor belt, which eventually, as it got outside the seam, it was dropping into these trucks underneath that one. But we, me and another one, used to follow it down with a little small shovel, and what wasn't sort of got onto the conveyor belt, we cleared up after. Not to every scrap, you see. And you'd do one length, so as I say, 20, 30 yards long, these was. And general buggering about after we'd got to the other end, if there was any time at all, find your other bits of jobs to do. But that was an early turn shift. Now,
when you were on this sort of mechanical cutter,
We didn't work it.
Was there any opportunity to sabotage that or the conveyor belt, or did you?
Or the conveyor belt? Yes, used to get ripped. And that, and then it had split right across. Rubber. Any good way, you get a load of bloody coal on it. You see. And then at the other end, there was the. It was sort of. You've seen the thing on the fairground that was. It was a cakewalk, we used to call it. And you know that thing on the fairground. You walked on it and it shoved you back, and you had to try and walk on it, you know. And that bit of gear was at the end of this conveyor belt, and it was shh, 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 and it was sort of going like that. Well, you could mess about with that. You could jam it and all sorts. You could jam that bugger at all. These trucks were fastened, but they could be a sort of a peg arrangement come out, and they could be turned round because of emptying them out when they got up there, you know. You could forget to put the peg in, and then when they got all the coal in, it'd all go over, all outside, so some bugger had to go and shovel it. All delayed action games.
Did you actually do this yourself, or was it other people doing it? I mean,
we've done it, me and a lad, together, so... You know, me and me up or something like that.
Why did you do it? Because it was taking a
Yes, I know, we got the bloody job of filling it up again, but the thing was that we felt that we was... getting her home with no chance of getting her home back. We were beaten to start with, weren't we? And there was only little ways that you felt like you were doing something against the bugger. Do you know what I mean?
Was it sort of to get your own back for yourselves, or was it sort of for king and country?
Well, oh no, for ourselves, what they were doing. Oh no, no, I must admit, no, no. If some bugger were doing something to you, and even if you had to do it round the back, you got your own back. You know,
so it was personal?
It was a personal thing, but everybody seemed to have the same personal feeling. It wasn't just an isolated one. And this shift, as I say, did the second shift come down, and they made it, they swept it up, and you could have had your bloody dinner off the floor at the finish. You know what I mean? Perfectly. Every ounce of dust even was cleared. And preparing for the machine to be moved over. It'd take a slice out, maybe 1.5 the width of that settee there, you see.
About 5 foot then.
And then it'd be moved across at the end to slice through again and drag out.
What about your claustrophobia in a 3 foot?
Oh, God blimey, yes. Yes, frightening. Frightening. You felt trapped. Well, you would have been if anything had happened. I felt more happy. Well, I wasn't happy in any part of it. I was only happy was when I got out of the top at the cage. But where I felt less claustrophobic was in the ballroom one, as we called it, you know, the big tall one. But that meter eye one. Nope. That wasn't a nice place to be at all. But, as I've said about 535, when you was on night shift, the night shift turn, you used to be down there, and he'd have you there for 10 o'clock, even if you left the camp at half past 7, 10 o'clock there, and then you moved it over the machine and the conveyor belt, and took their props, which was not wooden, metal. There was an extension. You put them up so high and put a pin through, and then put a little chuck at the top with the, you follow? What do you call them? You're damn right, an extension, aren't you? Yeah, so you took them down from where they was previously and come along and put them up at the last cutting. And that was the movement each night shift along. And the quicker you did that, the quicker you got out. When you'd done that, once you prepared it for the early turn, start cutting, it'd take you to the bottom of the shaft and you could go on up them and get back. Could be 1, half past 1, 2 o'clock maybe. So that was one benefit, if you could see it. But of course, when you got back at maybe 2, 3 in the morning, there was no food waiting for you, nothing, and no brew, no drink. So you just went to bed. But the fact was that you wasn't working.
Now, you said that you were becoming more. It was becoming more obvious that you were losing weight, you know, that you were...
Oh, yes, because we was grafting like that, and the food was, inadequate. It was only water and a bit of sauerkraut sometimes, that's their cabbagey stuff, and the bloody skilly, and the stinking cheese. They give you a little bit of cheese, about an ounce, 2 ounces of cheese, and it smelt to the heaven's eye.
Did you lose a lot of weight? At that stage.
Well, at that stage, I was losing weight noticeably. I can only tell you what I came home like.
What was that?
Just over 7 stone. And I was nearly 11 when I went.
So, was it making you weaker, you know, the lack of food? I mean, was your strength keeping up?
You was buggered, in other words. You hadn't got this. You had to do it. You had to go. You could only do what you could. And I don't know how you can put this, because you weren't getting the food, but you still had to do these things. And even if you was losing, even if you felt you were losing weight or it was notable, I mean, you didn't look at yourself. You know mirrors, you know wardrobe mirror to look at yourself and say, God love us, I've lost some off my hips or off my face is going in. You only saw it by the bloke that you was working with or living with next door. And if he's going like that, not only him, everybody else, you were going like that. And you felt, obviously, you noticed lighter, your legs are thinner, your arms are thinner.